You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has come out with a new model, and that model is the 110 Ultralight. At under 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 Action. This comes in a variety of calibers. It has a gray AccuFinish stock with adjustable comb height. This is an awesome rifle, and basically Savage is at it again. These guys have done amazing things in the past, and now they're doing amazing things in the future. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
This is the Average Conservationist Podcast, brought to you in partner with 2% for Conservation. 2% for Conservation's mission is to create an alliance of businesses and individuals that ensure the future of hunting and angling by committing their time and dollars to fish and wildlife. 1% of time plus 1% of money equals 2% for Conservation. 2% helps businesses and people pair with conservation causes to support things that fit what they care about. Whether you're into fishing, hunting, or just getting outdoors, 2% can help you not only start giving back to wildlife, but get certified for it. Getting 2% certified means you've made the same commitment as popular brands like Sitka, First Light, Stone Glacier, and Seek Outside in giving at least 1% of your time and money back to wildlife. But it's not just for outdoor companies. Breweries, contractors, coffee roasters, and even piano repair companies have earned 2% certification and stand out as leaders in their communities. Businesses that are committed to conservation deserve your business when you shop. Learn more about 2% for Conservation at fishandwildlife.org. That's fishandwildlife.org. Happy Thursday, everyone. Welcome back to the Average Conservationist Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Ewing, and this is episode number 9. This week on the podcast, I am joined by Cindy Stites of Indiana. Cindy's a great story. She kind of got into hunting and conservation about 8 years ago and has not looked back. She is involved in numerous conservation organizations, both locally there in Indiana and some national organizations as well. But to me, more importantly, is the work that she's doing there in Indiana with the 4-H and being a shooting instructor with them, and then volunteering her time as a hunter education instructor as well. I think that kind of mentoring our youth and exposing them to conservation and the outdoors and wildlife at a young age, and hoping that they can kind of continue that on into their adulthood, I think is extremely important for the future of hunting and angling and conservation. So the work that Cindy is doing there in Indiana is super impressive, and I'm really excited for you guys to hear her story and hear the passion that she has for conservation, the outdoors, and for future generations to come. But before we get into the episode, I want to talk about our partners over at Stone Glacier. So whether you're gearing up for that Western hunt this fall, or you're getting ready to hit the whitetail woods, Stone Glacier is going to have a pack or a base layer or an outerwear that you need. Their equipment is super versatile. It's built here in the USA. It's second to none in terms of the quality that you're going to get out of them. You can check them out at stoneglacier.com. They also have a new app that you can download. So whether you're using an Apple device or an Android, you can get it through the App Store or Google Play, and really just kind of stay up to date on all the latest happenings with Stone Glacier. I see they have a new bino harness coming out that they're running a contest on right now to try to pick a name for. So definitely be sure to give Stone Glacier a look if you're in the need for a new pack or a new sleeping bag, a new lightweight tent, some base layers, mid layers, you know, really anything. So check them out at stoneglacier.com. All right. With me today on the phone, I have Cindy Stites. Cindy, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. So I got to tell you that you know, prior to us hopping on here, we exchanged some messages and stuff like that. You know, I like to get a good idea of what people are into, you know, in terms of conservation before we have before we hop on here. And I'll have to say, like, after reading all the stuff that you are into, I'm really excited about this conversation today.
Well, good. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm excited about talking about being very busy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you have any time other than to work on conservation. I mean, so, you know, you've seen the stuff on social media and, you know, the kind of the tagline, let's call it, that we use for the podcast is average people doing extraordinary work in the field of conservation. Well, people are going to soon find out why you hit the latter part of that out of the park.
But, it's almost embarrassing because I don't feel like I'm doing, I don't think I'm doing anything extraordinary. I think I'm just doing what I'm passionate about. So it doesn't seem like that much of a big deal really to me.
But that's a very good attitude to have. Like, and to me that kind of says, you know, like, you're not doing this so that people recognize you for the work that you're doing. You said it, you're doing it because you're passionate about it. And that's what I've found with speaking to people on this podcast is, you know, no one's in it for the glory because, you know, conservation isn't this big glorious thing on the outside, right? But the satisfaction that you get from it personally it's tough to really explain, you know, and knowing that you're not just doing it for yourself, but you're doing it for a lot of, you know, future generations to enjoy the same things that you are is great.
Yeah, it's been an eye opener. It wasn't my intention to jump in to the field of conservation, but once I started hunting, I started hunting 8 years ago. And after the first few seasons, I realized the value in the habitat and the value and just making sure that sticks around. And I've heard a few people say, you know, you can't just keep taking, you have to give something back. And that really resonated with me pretty strongly. And that's why I got involved. I'd never volunteered for anything in my life until the first person asked for me to get involved with our local 4-H shooting sports program. And I was terrified and I said yes. And then that just snowballed into a lot of other things. So,
well, yeah, well, first off, that's great that you stepped out of your comfort zone a little bit. And, you know, it doesn't seem like something that would be too difficult to get involved with conservation, volunteering your time, especially for something that you're passionate about. But it can be a bit overwhelming, I guess, at first, especially if you're new to hunting or you're new to fishing, you know, whatever it may be. You don't want to come in there and try to project yourself as kind of like this expert or you know it all in the field of, you know, whatever you're hunting or fishing or anything like that, because I mean, I think we're all in that same boat. There's so many people out there that know so much about hunting and fishing and things like that, that you don't want to pass along, you know, misinformation.
Right. And that was the thing I was most nervous about, because I'd been shooting archery for just a few years. And my boyfriend Chance, his little girl was shooting sports, and she was shooting rifle, pistol, and muzzle loader. And she hadn't been doing archery, but I got to talking to one of the instructors when we were there to pick her up. And he was like, "So you shoot archery?" And I was like, "Oh God, yes." And he goes, "Well, you know, we sure could use you to help, you know, be an archery instructor. There's a lot of little girls that shoot and we don't have any female instructors. And I just think that they could relate to you better. And maybe you might be able to make them more comfortable." And I said, "You know, I don't know." So I let it go, and then I waited a few weeks, and he had told me about a meeting that was coming up. He said, "Well, if you're interested, you should come to this meeting for all the instructors that we have once a month, and we can talk to you about it." So I thought about it and I showed up at the meeting, and while I was kind of giving a bio to the other instructors of who I was and that I thought I was interested, Steven Spencer, another guy that was there, he's a big part of the program, he was like, "So you hunt?" I said, "Yes." He goes, "So would you want to be a hunter education instructor?" I was like, "What? You're going to be kidding me." He's like, "Well, what would happen is," because they had explained that I'd go to Ross Camp, which is a camp in Tippecanoe County that they send all the instructors to get trained. And you spend a weekend up there. He said, essentially what would happen is you'd do the exact same thing, but you'd be getting trained to be a hunter's ed instructor versus the shooting sports. So it's just, you're repeating the weekend with a different education value. And I was like, okay. And, you know, it was just that I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but for some reason I said yes. And then it was probably the best decision I've ever made. And that was the most uncomfortable decision, probably the most uncomfortable yes I've ever given. Cause I, like I said, it was out of my comfort zone. I'm an introvert big time. And I like just kind of being off by myself, but it's been life changing and I'm glad I did it.
Well, life changing for all the right reasons, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I definitely want to get into more of the work that you're doing with 4-H shooting, with being a hunter education instructor. But first, so kind of rewinding a little bit, what is it that you do for your day job? So I mean, I know you're volunteering with all these organizations, but what makes you an average conservationist?
Well, I'm actually a horticulturist and an arborist. So I've been working in horticulture for 24 years.
Okay.
And I've been an arborist for 6 or 7 now.
Okay.
So I've been working in the outdoors forever, but just not as someone in conservation. It was more as a landscaper, mm-hmm. or I did plant propagation. I worked at a wholesale grower where we grew native Indiana trees. So I've kind of run the gamut on the horticulture field. I'm actually not working right now. I lost my job when COVID hit, so I've been chilling.
Yeah.
it's been a blessing. I thought it was just the worst thing that could have ever happened, but to be honest, in the last year, I was really looking to change careers and go into conservation, mm-hmm. just because it had just, my passions have changed. I mean, my passions were always plants, and I think that's always going to be there. But given the state of the industry and with horticulture, being a woman in the industry is tough.
Okay.
You take your lumps. And I think it had just wore on me enough that I was ready to, you know, look at moving into something related with either habitat restoration or something like that. Something I was somewhat familiar with, mm-hmm. but kind of on a, you know, in a different career path.
Yeah.
So it's been a blessing. So I'm not really working right now, but I'm looking for that next, you know, whatever that next step is.
Yeah. And that's, and well, first I'm sorry to hear that, obviously losing your job during all this time. I know it's crazy out there. I mean, there's a lot of people that are in that same boat, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I like the attitude that you have, that you're trying to look at it from a positive standpoint, because you said you were kind of 1 foot out the door a little bit, wanting to reapply your knowledge in horticulture to, you know, the outdoors, to conservation, which I think to me seems like it should be a pretty seamless process once you find the right fit.
Right. It should be a natural flow. And just also, I think my passion for telling the story of hunting and the outdoors, and I think there's a lot of different directions I could go. It's just, you know, time will tell. Something will turn up. I'm not getting too bent out of shape about it. I've been hiking a lot and enjoying. I actually work in my own yard now, and I'm enjoying it, where before it was a chore. So now I'm kind of getting back to where I was before. So it'll shake out. It'll be fine.
Well, good. Now, going back to, you said you started hunting 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. What was it that, I mean, so I would consider you then probably an adult onset hunter, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a term that gets thrown
I have
around
the illness.
A lot. It's a good illness to have.
Yes, it is.
So what was it that got you involved into hunting?
My boyfriend, which I know a lot of women probably get tossed into hunting the same way, or at least introduced to hunting that way. But, we started dating, and he said, you know, I think you'd like to go hunting. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't. And he's like, what do you mean? You love to fish. You've fished your whole life. I said, well, yeah, but I don't think I could go out and like shoot any. I don't have that in me.
Right.
He said, well, and so he prodded a little bit, and I went out with him and sat a few times. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to try this. And then I wouldn't say it turned into an obsession, but it was a turning point for me that I thought, okay, I'm going to go out and try to learn something that I never in a million years would have tackled. And Chance is he's a tough love kind of guy. So mm-hmm. he just threw me in the woods, and he was like, figure it out. That's how I learned. And I thought, I mean, he taught me how to shoot because I was shooting right-handed, and he kept looking at me like I was he's like, "What are you? I don't understand what you're doing." Well, when I was looking down the barrel, I was leaning over and looking with my left eye. And
okay.
He's like, "You're doing it wrong." I said, "Look, I pitch fast pitch with my right hand. I shoot basketball with my right hand. I do this right-handed." He's like, "No, it's not about what hand. It's about which eye you need to use."
Which dominant eye? Yeah.
Yeah, and I had no idea, you know. So I, like I said, I knew nothing, but once I started hunting and getting out there, and every time I went out, I learned something new. And there were a lot of arguments, a lot of tears, a lot of frustration. And at one point he told me to quit. He's like, "I'm so sick of listening to you complain about how hard this is." He's like, "Just quit." And then at that point I was like, okay, I'm not, there's no way I'm quitting. So that's how I got introduced to hunting, and I haven't looked back.
So being in the Midwest here, are you doing a lot of like waterfowl, turkey, deer? What's kind of your animal of choice?
Turkey, deer. Probably my favorite is to squirrel hunt. I love to squirrel hunt. That's like, and I just started squirrel hunting 2 years ago, but that has by far been the most fun.
Yeah.
Deer hunting is still, that's probably always going to be my biggest, you know, obsession, but
yeah.
I love to squirrel hunt. I love to turkey hunt. We dove hunt. I pheasant hunt. Just kind of a mixed bag. I guess generalist is probably the best way to describe me.
Yeah, that's good though. So what was it that you first got started on hunting? Was it whitetail?
It was whitetail. Yeah. I went big first.
Yeah. See, that's a tough one, especially if, you know, just to, you know, I mean, there's just so many elements, you know, there's so many elements that go into, you know, whitetail hunting and being successful at it too, right? That's jumping in the deep end for sure.
Yeah. And especially I would go out and, you know, I would sit and I would get busted, or I wouldn't see anything, or I'd be sitting with the wind the wrong direction, you know, and I'd come back to Chance's house because I didn't live here at the time. And I'm like, I don't understand why this is so hard. He's like, "Do you want me to tell you what you did wrong?" And I'm like, "Why?" Yeah. And he'd explain it to me. He goes, "That's why I didn't go out today." I'm like, "Why didn't you tell me this before?" He's like, "Because you have to learn." And it was so frustrating. But I think most people would not want to learn how to hunt that way. And I think especially women would just be completely turned off by it. But something about me is not right. And it was the challenge, and it was feeling like I knew I could figure it out. I didn't know how I was going to figure it out, but I thought, I'm not going to let this beat me. So I just kept going, and I kept getting mad. And it's amazing now, looking back, at how much I know now that I didn't know then, but how much more I have to learn. I mean, it's just a never ending process. And you think you have something figured out, and then you get it busted. And then it's just, it really puts you in your place, and it reminds you that you still have a lot of work to do. So it's been fun. I mean, it's probably been one of the most enjoyable frustrations that I've ever had.
Yeah, there's nothing quite as humbling as hunting or fishing, for that matter. You know, it's all can be very, very tough, and yeah, makes you want to pound your head against the tree for the most part.
Yeah.
So now, we touched on it very early on in the conversation here, but you're doing a lot of volunteer work with a lot of different conservation organizations. Can you tell me about just kind of give me a list of some of the organizations, or actually all the organizations that you're volunteering your time with?
Okay. I hope I don't forget anyone. Well, actually, I wrote some down. So I'm with, obviously, the Indiana Hunter Education Association. Mm-hmm. I'm a life member. I just became a life member with them. So I'm a certified volunteer hunter ed instructor. I also am a certified 4-H shooting sports instructor with the state of Indiana, and I teach archery to our 4-H local 4-H club. And I also was asked last year to be an apprentice for the state teaching team for shooting sports. So there's, I think, 19 or 20 members to that out of all the shooting sports instructors in the state. And I was really floored that they asked me to come back and to teach. So I'm going through my year's apprenticeship to make sure it's a good fit for me and a good fit for them. And if everything goes well by the end of the year, I hope to be a member of the state teaching team for shooting sports. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
I also work with the International Caribou Foundation, which is a fairly young foundation, but is working really hard to bring awareness to the caribou populations that are failing, and just the fact that, you know, we don't even have caribou in the lower 48 anymore.
Right.
So I work as a communications advisor. I volunteer on their board doing that. And it's unfortunate right now. There's so many things that have been canceled event-wise. There's not a lot to communicate on other than just basic information on caribou in general. So
with the Caribou Foundation, how is it that someone from Indiana gets involved in a conservation organization centered around an animal that's not even in the lower 48 anymore? How does that happen?
That is a phenomenal question. my name was suggested to the foundation, to John Lind and Cheryl Lind, basically by Jared Frazier. And I don't know if Matting Patelis also backed that up, but I know Jared swung my name that way, and which I appreciate greatly. Now, that being said, when John called me and we talked about it, we had a pretty lengthy phone call about, you know, me joining the board and what I would do as a communication advisor and just what the organization is about. And I made it very clear to him that I didn't know anything about caribou other than watching a few, you know, episodes on TV of a caribou hunt in Alaska.
Right.
I just don't have that much knowledge on caribou because, like you said, I'm in flatland Indiana.
Yeah.
So there's that. And he was very gracious. And he said, you know, I know you'll learn and we trust that you'll learn. And I said, why do you want me to do this? I'm in Indiana. I'm so far removed from where you guys are and from caribou in general. And he said, well, we think that you can tell a story. And we feel like the way that you communicate is just what we need to tell the story about caribou to help people learn about the plight of the animal and what we can do to help. So I was floored. I was like, okay, well, that's fair. I said, do you think the board will vote me in? I said, nobody knows who I am. They don't, you know, the people that are on the board are names that a lot of people, especially out west, are going to be familiar with. I said, I'm nobody. I'm nobody in Indiana, and I'm just afraid that they won't vote for me. And then he let me know a while later, a few weeks later, I think. He's like, okay, you're in. So I was pretty excited.
Well,
I'm really excited about working with the group in general, just because it's a learning opportunity for me. And I think it's a great thing because it's an animal that, I mean, everybody knows about elk and everybody knows about, you know, how turkey were brought back and white-tailed deer were brought back. And I just think it's time for the caribou. It's their turn.
That's the next great conservation success story in terms of helping a population return to where it once was.
Yeah, I really hope so.
You're also a member of some other organizations. I don't necessarily know that you are volunteering your time, but you're, you know, certainly a member for some more Western organizations. Have you ever lived out West or just kind of?
No, I'd like to.
Sure.
I think everybody would like to at some
right.
point in their life. But Chance and I have been hunting in Wyoming. This fall will be our fifth time out there, fifth year in a row. We've got family friends that live out near Lingle, Wyoming, and we stay with them, and we just fell in love with just, I don't know, not necessarily the idea of the West, but we fell in love with the landscape and the animals and just the whole, you know, the whole thing. And we hunt mule deer, so I'm very passionate about mule deer. That's probably, if I had to rank the animals that are my favorite to watch, mule deer is definitely at the top. I mean, I could just sit and watch them all day. So I am a member of the Mule Deer Foundation, which sounds odd coming from Indiana because it's not like we have a chapter here.
Right.
And actually, when you fill out your membership, it asks what your local chapter is. And I had to put Torrington, Wyoming, because that's the only town I'm familiar with because we
right.
go to Torrington quite a bit while we're out there. So, but then, you know, also Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and I need to renew, but I was a member of the Wild Sheep Foundation and the Less Than 1% Club. And I don't know. I don't think geography should dictate what I support. And I have hope that maybe someday I'll be hunting elk. Yeah. I mean, Chance is going to hunt elk in Montana this year, and he's beside himself. I'm not going with him because I'm going to be going to deer camp in Montana like 2 weeks later. So we have to split our time, but I think it's still important to support. If we're going to go out there and take from the land, I think it's important that we support the organizations that are giving back. And if I can't be out there doing the work and pulling fence rows and doing all that kind of stuff, it, you know, paying my membership fee or making a donation may not be, it may not make such an impact as out there doing the actual work on the ground, but it's all I can do at this point.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that really anyone in your position should necessarily feel bad about only being able to pay their membership dues, or, you know, if they're able to donate money to do that as well, because it all, excuse me, it all adds up, right? I mean, the fact that you have the wherewithal to say, you know what, I really enjoy mule deer hunting. It's something that I'm passionate about. You know, you can't be there to, like you said, help pull fence or help do cleanup projects or habitat restoration, whatever it is, but you can still donate your money, and that money's going to go towards, you know, those projects that are being done, you know, right there, in Wyoming, for example. So no, I think that's great that you still want to, you know, you don't just want to take, you want to give back as much as you can as well.
Yeah. And I see, organizations like, I'm an Artemis ambassador. And I see the girls out doing these projects, and I'm like, God, I just want to be there so bad. I want to be able to be out working with them and putting in the work and, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears. And that part of it is really hard for me at times because I feel like I'm in the wrong place. But then when I go back and think about my kids at hunter ed classes, or my, you know, my archery kids, or even the kids that I'm mentoring here on my own, I remember that, you know, I'm probably where I'm supposed to be right now.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean this is always where I'm supposed to be, but right now I think I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is just, you know, my perspective, that at this point, you know, having such an impact on future generations is, it to me, especially with the way, you know, numbers have been trending down in terms of hunters and anglers and things like that, or at least, you know, in license sales. So yeah, to get people, the younger generation and females, you know, more specifically involved at an early age to hopefully keep them engaged, you know, until, you know, they're an adult and are doing these things on their own, is, I think, is paramount in terms of hunting and angling and just conservation in general in the future, for the future.
I do too. And it's funny that you bring up the women's side of it. I had a very awkward day-long conversation with somebody yesterday whom I don't know on Instagram. And I had made a comment about something, and he responded to it, and he interpreted my comment completely wrong. So I said, let's chat in a private message and just, let's have a conversation.
Right.
And we did, and it lasted all day, literally. And he just, like, the last message just happened this morning, and we did not agree on the perception of women in the outdoors. And we didn't agree that, you know, maybe the ethos needs to change a little bit, because my argument was that I feel like, he said, well, I don't think women need to be coddled. And there were many directions I could have went with that, but I didn't. And I said, look, I don't think women want to be coddled, and I don't think that the industry has to change to make me feel comfortable. But what I do think is that it needs to change in the sense that women are huge contributors to conservation. Women are the ones a lot of times out spending the money. Women are the ones that a lot of times are inviting people that don't look like us into the outdoors. We're willing to share our spaces. We're not territorial. We don't care if you're, you know, black, white, brown, blue, or purple. We don't care if you're part of the LGBTQ community. We want you there, because it's, you know, why keep that from anybody? So I think having girls that are young that show the interest in hunting, they need to know that, you know, they can do it just as much as anybody else can. And I think if we can get girls involved and have them stay involved, that, in my opinion, is good for the future of hunting. And I'm not saying the guys aren't doing it right. That's not what I mean at all. I just mean that I think women offer a different perspective, and they offer a welcoming perspective to anybody. And I think that's important. So, yeah, I mean, getting girls involved is huge.
Yeah, and you made a good point there where you said that they tend to be more inviting, females do, in terms of hunting and things like that. Because for you, for example, for getting into hunting later in life, right? I mean, you had your boyfriend who got you involved, but could you imagine trying to just on your own go out and meet, you know, people who are hunting or, you know, who are really into hunting to try to get yourself involved? I mean, it's I talked about this with another guest that I had on a few weeks ago. It's it can be very intimidating, right? To try to introduce yourself or put yourself out there to be able to learn how to hunt, how to fish, to do these things that you know you want to do. You want, even if it's just try it, you know, it's just, it can be very difficult. So yeah, the more people you can get involved at a young age, the more people it's going to bring in long term. And I totally agree with your outlook on that.
I ended the conversation with him and I said, look, you know, after I don't know even how many messages, it was such a good conversation. It was a little heated at times because we were just coming from complete opposite perspectives. Mm-hmm. But by the time we got done talking, you know, I said, look, I didn't spend my Sunday on here to argue with you. I just wanted to have a conversation so that we could understand each other better. And I think we're at that point now. And he messaged me back this morning. He said, you know, I agree that having the conversation was good. And I think that we'd actually get along and we're somebody that, you know, we could sit around, drink a beer around the fire and talk about hunting together. So it went better than expected. But I think so often on social media, you just argue. You argue. Oh, yeah. You don't have any accountability for what you say. You can just say it and move on.
Yep.
And I think, you know, Chance gives me grief all the time. He's like, why are you getting in these conversations with people you don't know? I said, because it's important. Mm-hmm. And that's not his thing. He's just like, ah, I just don't even read that stuff. But it ended up being worth my time, I think, because maybe it didn't completely change this guy's perspective, but he at least took the time to listen to mine. And it opened his eyes a little bit, I think.
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say is, he went from maybe not being very receptive at all to your train of thought, to how you viewed things. But it, you know, I don't know the details of the conversation, but presumably he wasn't attacking you personally or anything like that, because the conversation, you know, clearly lasted for most of the day.
Oh yeah.
So
it was more based on he felt like a certain article shouldn't have been removed and nobody should have to apologize because they write an article that, you know, maybe isn't complimentary to women in the outdoors. And he said, I don't care if they make fun of women. And I was like, whoa, okay, we need to dive a little bit deeper into this. Yeah. You know, I said, think about if you had a daughter and think about if she was very accomplished at something and somebody wrote an article about her and the first three paragraphs of the article talked about her boobs.
Right.
How would you feel about? Would you still think that that author is hilarious?
Yeah.
And would you still tell her, oh, it's all right if they made fun of you?
Yeah.
I said you have to put it in the perspective of someone that means something to you, mm-hmm. and then look at it that way. You can't just umbrella, you know, that mentality, especially in the outdoor industry, because women are the, you know, I guess we're the fastest growing demographic, so.
Sure,
you can't cut out your fastest growing demographic and alienate people that are contributing so much, you know, to the industry and to the outdoors in general. So it ended up being okay, but we had some tough words for each other for a while.
Yeah, but those tough conversations are really what's needed to, especially with people who tend to be a bit more close-minded about things. They need to hear those different viewpoints on things. Just. Because you have to step outside of your bubble from time to time and realize that there's other people out there with different views, especially on like something like hunting, right? Which,
oh yeah,
you know, that you wouldn't necessarily think. I mean, hunting seems pretty straightforward, right? But there's nuance to all sorts of different things in hunting and conservation. So yeah, some people only look at it one way, or were only raised to look at it one way. You know, that they only know it like that. So to have someone else, you know, share their opinion or their view, I think is very important. And at the end of the day, even if you don't agree with them, at least you listen to them, because maybe a year down the road or something like that, that person has a change of heart or their circumstances changes. And all of a sudden now they're going, man, you know, that conversation I had with that woman on Instagram a year ago, that kind of really resonates now more so than ever.
Yeah, I agree. And I've always been one that has thought that I am not going to ever be disrespectful to anyone, especially I would never do that in a public setting or a public forum, no matter how much we disagree. But I've always kind of stuck true to myself, and I've posted what I believe, or and I don't I'm not driven by followers or likes, none of that stuff. To me, it's just an outlet. Like I said, I'm an introvert, so social media is a great way for me to be able to, tell a story or share something without having to get into a super deep conversation or even have small talk. I think small talk is probably my biggest fear in life because it's just so uncomfortable. I like deep, meaningful conversations, which is really hard to do on a social media platform. So, but I've never been driven by who likes me or doesn't like me, or I just put it out there and if people like it, that's fine. And him and I just had a disagreement, but we talked through it, and I don't think him and I are gonna, go out for pizza next week, but we at least were cordial to each other when it was over.
Yeah, you had an adult conversation, which I think, especially on social media anymore, is if you
Tough.
have different viewpoints than someone else, I mean, it's impossible. I mean, so I have social media for my company and like a Facebook and an Instagram page, and the only reason I have to have a personal Facebook account is so that I can have the business page and a business Instagram account, because it's so exhausting to look at all the negativity that's out there all the time, whether it's, I mean, it doesn't matter what the situation is. There's always going to
Anything.
be.
It's anything. Yeah. And that's why I told him, I said, I can assure you that everyone's never going to agree with everyone else. It's just, it will never happen. But having a conversation at least gives you a viewpoint that, someone else has, or that you can take a perspective of someone else's and look at it and say, yeah, okay, yeah, I agree with it, or no, I still don't agree with it. But you can at least be an adult and have a conversation that's not hateful, and you're not just trolling people.
Yeah, because everyone thinks if you put it on Facebook or on Instagram that it's gospel, and
Oh,
that's because
jeez,
it's their
I
opinion, it's the way of the world, and
know.
it's just
It's been
it's
a
so
great way to stay in touch with people, and I will tell you, it's been a great way to make new friends. I mean, I've got some friends that I've met on Instagram. Well, Deer Camp, 2 years ago, I never would have went to Deer Camp in Montana with all these women that are I'm now I consider close friends that I would do anything in the world for. And I met them through Instagram. So it's a blessing and it's a curse. I mean, it's how you use it.
Yeah, you got to take the good with the bad and just try to block out the bad as best as you can, because I mean, I think back to, when Instagram, or excuse me, when like Facebook, for example, started, and I was just in the latter part of college, and how much differently it was used back
Oh, yeah.
then to how, to how it's really used now, and it's very eye-opening and makes me kind of miss its infant stages when
The
everyone
old
was
days.
just, yeah, when everyone was just posting pictures of, going to parties or going to the bar or, friends and family and
Yeah.
stuff like that. It was a much more enjoyable thing to look at.
Yeah. But I was going to add, in addition to the organizations I'm involved with out west, I also am on the Indiana Turn In a Poacher Board, which is a citizen advisory board, excuse me, that works to kind of educate people in the state of Indiana about poaching, and it's a preventative measure, we hope, that encourages the public to turn in people that are poaching. There are rewards that get offered if someone's prosecuted, so it's I think it's a good thing. It's a tough subject because a lot of people think they can get away with basically anything out in the woods and nobody's ever going to know, but I think people are starting to realize that there's people watching and there's the ethics. The ethics are important, and if somebody sees somebody doing something wrong, they usually don't feel bad about calling the tip line and turning them in. So I'm proud to be a member of that board also.
So how are you guys kind of spreading awareness and spreading the word about that Turn In a Poacher
A lot of it is
organization?
through our Department of Natural Resources website through Indiana. Most of it is through there. I know that right now the board, I'm new. I've only been on for a couple months, but right now the board is working on different ways to get the word out, whether that be having events and just general awareness, or like a Facebook page or social media type stuff. So it's a board. And I have to be very careful how I say this. I don't want to offend anybody. It's an older board. Like, the people that are on the board are an older generation. So I don't think they're is a whole lot of concern about social media and you know, getting the word out that way. So I don't know if, and I'm 44 and I think I'm the youngest person on it. So I don't know if maybe bringing on younger people, they can maybe mix some of that in with getting the word out about the program or not. But if I can help in that way, I certainly will.
Yeah, you can certainly reach a different demographic using social media as opposed to, you know, just email blasts or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So I want to take a step back a little bit. When you were talking about the conversation that you had with the gentleman, and you had just kind of mentioned it in passing, but Artemis Sportswoman, mm-hmm. excuse me. Tell me a little bit more about that, because I'm familiar with it, kind of from a 30,000 foot view. I know you're an ambassador for them. So tell me more about the organization and really what their mission is.
So Artemis Sportswoman is a side shoot of the National Wildlife Federation. It was, and I'm going to, I'm terrible with stats, but it was organized with a group of women a few years ago that thought that women needed a place to come together to learn about how to advocate for conservation. So Marsha Brownlee is now the director, and she's running the ship and doing a phenomenal job. But it's essentially to teach women about how to reach out to their elected officials. It's to give them confidence to have the conversations about conservation that maybe they didn't have the confidence to have before, maybe because they were a woman or they just, you know, they didn't really know because they'd never done that before. I was pretty new a few years ago about reaching out to elected officials. I just, you know, I'd never done it. I didn't know what to say. I didn't want to sound foolish, but right. I wanted to have that voice. So they have different events. Some events are work days where they go out and, like I said, pull fences or do mm-hmm. stuff like that. Cleanup days. Other events are when they actually get together and they have like an outdoor survival event that teaches women how to feel comfortable in the outdoors. They've sent people to Washington, D.C. to advocate. So it's just basically a group that empowers women to be active in conservation and to use their voice and not feel that they shouldn't do that just because they're a woman, I guess is the best. That's my way to explain it.
Yeah. And so I guess where can, you know, if there's, you know, women that are listening to the podcast that maybe are unfamiliar with Artemis, where can they find out more about joining the organization?
You can go to the Artemis website, which is just Artemis. I think it's Artemis Sportswoman. It might be .org, but if you type in Artemis Sportswoman mm-hmm. in your search engine, you're going to find it. There's a podcast that's sponsored by Hunt Eat. There's a Facebook page. There's an Instagram page. Basically, any place you're on social, you can find Artemis. And I'm sure there's links on those places that you can find to their website to find out more about the program and how to become an ambassador. And they just recently kind of spread their wings to the east. And it's something I've been waiting on for a couple of years because I just kept waiting for them to make the announcement that they were heading east, because it's typically been a Western organization, I think, because they're so young and mm-hmm. they were just trying to get their feet under them and get established. But they got so many people from east of the Mississippi that were expressing interest that they decided it was finally time to spread their wings a little bit. So that's how I got to be an ambassador.
Okay. So, I mean, now the conversation that you had with this gentleman the other day, do you think that was more kind of fueled by just your general outlook on things? Or do you think like being involved with Artemis and making sure that women have a voice for conservation, did that kind of play a part in that as well?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think some of it is Artemis and just, you know, feeling like I don't have to sit down and shut up because I'm a woman. Not that anybody's said that I need to do
right.
that, but just I feel like that's part of it. Part of it, too, I don't know. I've just met a lot of really strong women in the last few years, and most of that's associated with the deer camp that started in 2018 in Montana. And I think it's we've reached a point that we really enjoy a lot of the hunting platforms that are out there, right? Mm-hmm. We learn a lot. We enjoy conversation. But I think we've all reached a point to where we feel like women need a little bit more representation. And those women who have spoken up on that and have reached out to those platforms to voice, you know, their concern or their opinion have empowered me a little bit to have my own voice and make my own voice a little bit stronger. So if someone is going to, this guy didn't attack me, but he was very condescending in his mm-hmm. remark. I feel like I have, you know, the power now to have that conversation. And I didn't want to do it on the platform we were on because it's a very well-known person in the hunting industry. And I said, this isn't the place for it. Right. Hit me in private messages and we'll talk. And I didn't expect that he would, but he did. So I think it's the strong women that I've met through Artemis and through, you know, deer camp and just, in the outdoors arena, I guess, in general, that have kind of given me that voice that maybe I didn't have before.
Yeah. It's amazing what a good support system will do for your confidence, right? I mean, this is apples and oranges, but it's kind of the closest thing I can kind of compare it to is starting this podcast, right? Like it was very foreign to me. I was very, very uncomfortable talking into a microphone. And, you know, that's why, I mean, you and I can see each other now through this, which to me helps immensely.
Tremendously.
It feels much more like a conversation than when I was in seventh grade talking on the phone to one of my buddies or something.
Yep.
But the more you do it, the more you become comfortable with it. And the more you have people around you saying, hey, you're doing a great job, you know, work on this or work on that, you know, surround yourself with good people and you're going to be successful. You're going to have the right attitude and a positive outlook on no matter what you're doing, hunting, podcasting, horticulture, right. You know, whatever it is, if you surround yourself with the right people, it's going to make whatever you're doing that much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And like I said, the women I've met in the last few years, and I guess I should preface that with, I've never been friends with girls. and that's terrible. That is horrible. But I've always been a tomboy. I've always run around with guys. I've always been in sports. I just have never been, you know, super girly, and that's okay.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
But I didn't dislike girls. I just never had any that I felt like I had anything in common with to hang out with them.
Yeah.
And when I went to deer camp in 2018, the whole way out there, I was like, I need to turn around and go back home because I was driving out to Montana by myself. I didn't know anybody at camp. I mean, it was a bunch of women I didn't know. And I thought, I can't deal with like super prissy, you know, catty. I'm not going to be able to deal with this well. But then I got to thinking about it. And I thought, they're going up into the crazy mountains and they're camping for 5 days too and they're hunting. So I imagine we're probably going to get along okay.
Yeah.
And it ended up being just the greatest experience. And those relationships have just grown stronger. So while I never had a lot of girls as friends when I was younger, mm-hmm. my outlook has shifted completely now that I found that support system and this, you know, this strong group of women that, you know, we're not out there screaming. We're not man haters. We're not out there screaming women's lip. We just, you know, we just want a fair shot and an equal, you know, setting at the table. So, it's good to have friends.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, just the whole mission behind Artemis is great. And the more the better in terms of conservation or hunting is, as far as I'm concerned. What male, female, doesn't matter. If you're out there, you're enjoying wildlife. You're trying to harvest an animal or whatever the case may be. I'm all for it. Whoever wants to come.
Yeah. If there's a place to learn, then sign me up. Yeah. I mean, this is, we're all still learning. No matter how long you've been in the outdoors, you're learning something every time you go out. So, you know, I think that's the best part of it.
Now, speaking of learning, I want to go back to what we had talked about a little bit earlier with being a 4-H shooting instructor and a certified archery instructor. I'd imagine you've got to be pretty good with a bow if you're a certified archery instructor.
I wouldn't go that far. there's a grand difference between shooting at a target and going out and hunting with a bow. It's just so different. And I'm probably the worst at following my own instruction because when I went to learn what it needed, you know, what I needed to know to be an instructor, it went through, you know, all these steps of every single step, like 12 or 13. I can't remember how many steps now. I should know this, but there's a flip chart and it tells you every step that you take to drawing a bow, from picking it up and holding it to how you stand, to foot position, to how you place your hands, to how you pull your, to your release. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
I mean, and the one thing that sticks with me that is so funny that I come back to almost every week when we're teaching archery at 4-H during the summer is your follow through. And I tell the kids, cause I see the kids, they go to let go of their string. And these are just, these are recurves or these are Genesis bows. They don't use a release. They don't have sights. They're just bare bones mm-hmm. bows. Okay. That's what we teach on. And a lot of the kids, when they let go of their string, their arm goes straight out to the side. And the one thing that stuck with me when I went to get trained was pretend you have peanut butter on your ear. And when you let go of your string, you're wiping that peanut butter off your ear. And so now, even when I'm out shooting, I always think about having peanut butter on my ear. So it's funny what sticks with you when you go to these trainings and learn. But I can tell the kids what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong, and I can help them improve. And the best thing I think for me is when I see the light bulb come on for them, or they make a good shot and they turn around and look at me like they're just shocked.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's all you got to do. Just, that's all you got to do every time you get up there. Now, when I come home and start shooting, I'm overanalyzing everything I do. I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. I mean, it's so funny how I can be so confident, go help, you know, the kids at 4-H, and then I come home and I'm a train wreck.
Are you shooting traditional as well, or a recurve, or are you shooting a compound?
Compound.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just had shoulder surgery last year. So I'm trying to work back into getting my weight back up on my bow because mm-hmm. It was my draw arm. So, you know, and every time I get the opportunity to talk to one of the instructors that taught me, because I work with them through Hunter's Ed also, I'm like, oh, okay, so what should I do? And so, you know, should I change my arrows or should I change my broadhead? You know, and I'm asked, they're just like, just go home and shoot. Go home and shoot. The more you shoot, the more comfortable you're going to be. And that was probably the biggest lesson, you know, through all that is you think that if somebody is an instructor, they're really good with a bow, and that's not always the case. I think you have to be good with kids. Mm-hmm. You have to be a good communicator. You have to have patience, and you have to know, you know, the basic mechanics, because these kids are just shooting paper. And the majority of them are coming out once a week and they're shooting for 2 hours. They shoot from April to July until the fair is over, and then they're done for the year. So you don't have to get super crazy analytical about it. Right. They're just kids having fun. And as long as you're getting them out there and getting them interested, you know, that's all we're really trying to do.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that, it's, well, you kind of said it yourself. It's very rewarding watching everything kind of come together, right? Everything you've been trying to explain to them, trying to preach to them, show them the proper way to do things. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, they're hitting a bullseye or something like that. And yeah, that's gotta be, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that would, to me, would be the most rewarding thing, you know, being an instructor. Yeah.
It's the best thing ever. And then, you know, the same thing goes with Hunter's Ed. We offer the opportunity, if a kid is struggling with the test, we will offer to read the test to them, and then they can sit with their answer sheet and we will read the questions, because, you know, everybody learns differently. Mm-hmm. And last year we had a young lady she asked if somebody could read the test to her. So I went back with another instructor and we sat and I read the test, and she missed by a few questions. And so I went back over the questions with her to see if she really just didn't understand how it was worded, or if she just didn't really know the answer. Mm-hmm. And I worked with her a little bit, and we regraded her test and she passed, and she understood. It was just the way the wording was, you know, she knew the right answer. But when we got up and went to go back into the main room where all the other students were, she was crying and she was embarrassed. And I said, listen, I said, you have to remember something. A, you passed this test and you're fine. You are going to have your Hunter's Ed card. And B, when we were out there at the live shoot, all those boys were afraid to get up there and shoot that shotgun. Who was the first person that volunteered? And she kind of put her hand up. And I said, that's right, you did. I said, so you have nothing to be ashamed of. You passed this just like everybody else did. And you were braver than everybody else out on that firing line when you stood up there and shot that shotgun before everybody else. And she kind of smiled, and then she walked out into the room. And one of my instructors, well, Stephen Spencer, the guy that got me into this originally, he's like, I don't know how the way to say this. He's like, but you were made to do this. I'm like, what? He goes, you were made to do this. You're supposed to be doing this. The way you were with her, this is what you're supposed to be doing. And I'm like, oh no, I was just telling her that she, you know, she didn't have anything to be ashamed of. He's like, okay, that's fine. And he kind of went on, you know, yeah. But that right there is like, talk about rewarding.
Yeah.
I mean, she was crushed. She was embarrassed. But then when she realized, hey, you know what? I did something before everybody else. It kind of, it changed her perspective a little bit.
Yeah. I mean,
and
just
she was excited.
Just hearing that story. Yeah. It's, I'd say you're doing what you're supposed to be doing with those kids, because I mean, there's, well, one, when it comes to learning or taking a test, I mean, if you look at just public schools or private schools, school in general, right? I mean, if a child needs to learn differently than another child, like they accommodate that, right? Mm-hmm. They do what they can to make sure that no one's falling behind, that everyone's learning the same curriculum. Some people just need to, you know, ingest that or digest that information a little bit differently. So right. Why should something like Hunter's Ed be any different? Right. I mean, we just, you have to be cognizant of, you know, the students that are in your class. And if someone learns a little bit differently, no problem. We adapt. And, you know, because we want, you want to make sure that, that those kids, you know, are getting the same opportunities as everyone else. I mean, they're no different. They just learn different, you know? Yep.
And I knew darn good and well that she knew the information. I knew she could pass. I didn't, you know, there was never any question. And she was there. I think she had two sisters. I think she had two sisters with her. And I talked to her sisters and her dad afterwards. And I said, you know what? When you're ready to go hunting, call me. I said, we can go squirrel hunting, we can go deer hunting, whatever you want to do. When you're ready to go, just give me a call. And she kind of smiled real sheepishly. And she's like, okay, thank you. You know, and I can't imagine doing anything else. I think, you know, you live your life. I was talking about this to somebody yesterday. You live your life. And at least for me, I've always wondered, what in the hell is my purpose? Like what? You know, I see people that I went to school with that are doctors or, you know, they're pilots or they're nurses or they're doing these big, huge things and I'm planting trees. I'm like, what am I doing that's important, or what am I doing, you know, for the longest time? And then a couple of years ago when I started volunteering, I was like, this is kind of cool. And then after having these, you know, exchanges with these kids, I feel like, I don't know that this is 100% my purpose, but I certainly feel like I'm getting there. You know, I feel some kind of like relief, like I love this and I can't imagine doing anything else now. So maybe I'm getting closer.
Well, I mean, I can see you right now. So I can see the way you're lighting up when you're talking about this. I can see the emotions that are coming out of you. So if this isn't it, then you, like you said, you are knocking on the door of whatever you're supposed to be doing, because there's no doubt in my mind that you're having a very huge impact on, you know, future generations of hunters in Indiana. That's without question.
The best part about it is I'm having fun. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm enjoying it. So I don't know. That's what I like to do to spend my time, I guess.
Well, my recommendation being, nothing more than a small business owner and a podcast host, keep doing what you're doing, because you are clearly making a difference. And as happy as I can see that you are, I mean, it makes me kind of inspired to see how much someone else loves what they're doing. So keep it up, Cindy.
Okay. I will. Just because you said so.
Me and all of my infinite wisdom.
Yes, absolutely. I'll take your word for it.
Well, Cindy, this has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. I had a great time. You have a tremendous story, and I am really excited for people to hear about this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm glad Jared threw my name your way.
Yeah, me too.
I assumed he had to do some arm twisting, but I'm glad that you agreed, and I had a good time.
No, absolutely. I really enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds
all right,
good.
Take care.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. A big thank you to Cindy for hopping on the podcast this week. I'd also like to thank our partners over at Stone Glacier, and be sure to check them out at stoneglacier.com. I would also like to thank our partners, 2% for Conservation. Now, if you've been following along with 2% for Conservation, you've seen Jared talk a lot about the Bozeman Conservation Convention that they had scheduled for this year. Unfortunately, with everything going on, they had to cancel the convention for this year. Kind of in lieu of that, what they're doing is a Community Conservation Day, and that's going to be August 22nd. And really, what we're trying to do there is just get anyone and everyone outdoors doing something conservation related. We want to kind of flood social media with just a bunch of positive conservation content for that day. You know, to learn more, definitely be sure to follow along on 2% social media. And if you have questions about, you know, some things that you can do when the day comes, definitely be sure to hop on the website fishandwildlife.org, and you can find local businesses or local committee members and get in touch with them and find out about some different conservation activities or cleanups or anything like that that are going on that day. So again, be sure to follow along 2% on their different social media pages. Also, if you have any questions or need some clarification, be sure to check them out, fishandwildlife.org. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Stay safe out there, and remember that conservation starts with you.